Welcome to Fusion, a show for Relay FM members where I talk to hosts from various shows about a single topic. My name is Stephen Hackett, and this month I'm joined by Brad Dowdy of The Pen Addict and Notco, as well as Dan Provost of Studio Neat and the podcast Thoroughly Considered, to discuss the use of crowdfunding platforms like Kickstarter in launching projects, products, and even companies. Welcome, guys.
Hey, Stephen.
Thanks for having me.
So you both have a long history with Kickstarter through your companies, Studio Neat and Knock. And Brad, I know you've done some stuff with The Pen Addict as well. So Dan, let's start with you. Just what's a quick rundown of some stuff that you guys have done using crowdfunding?
Sure. Well, we started on Kickstarter way back in 2010 with our first product, the Glyph, which was a little tripod mount for the iPhone 4. And we had no intention of really starting a business or any aspirations higher than, you know, we had this cool idea and we wanted to make it into a product and give it to people. And it kind of blew up more than kind of our wildest expectations. And I was actually reminiscing right before we started recording. And I think at the time, this kind of dates it back to 2010. At the time when it was finished funding, I think it was the third highest funded Kickstarter project of all time.
Oh, wow.
Which is crazy because now it's probably not even, like, literally probably not even in the top 1,000. So just kind of shows how much Kickstarter has grown since then. But yeah, I'm referring to my business partner and friend, Tom Gerhardt. We decided to start a company after that success and have been returning to Kickstarter since then, and we've done eight projects on Kickstarter, 7 successes and 1 failure. And so, yeah, we continue to return to the platform.
And Brad, Knock started as a Kickstarter project as well, right?
Yeah, it's what got our business off the ground. You know, kind of like Dan, we weren't sure. You know, we didn't necessarily have intentions of launching a Kickstarter to start a business, but mm-hmm. we did launch a Kickstarter to kind of get our idea off the ground, kind of get some validation, see, you know, what people thought about our product. And also, like Dan and Tom's projects, the first one kind of got out of hand. It was like, wow, there's really some love out there. So Knock did a project, it was in late 2013, to make pen cases. I mean, it's a pretty simple idea. You know, I run in the stationery circles online, which is a weird thing to say, but our analog product, you know, kind of took off, and that allowed us to do the things we needed to do. And I, like Dan, I say we, my partner Jeff Bruckwicki, who is my partner at Knockco, it helped us, you know, kind of get our first, you know, orders underway and build our business, and kind of allowed us to have a framework built up to start selling online eventually and then do more things with Knock in the future. So it's really how Knock got started, was all due to the Kickstarter project we launched.
Something you both said that caught my attention was using Kickstarter as a way to gauge interest, I guess, or to gauge, you know, how successful a product may be out on the open market. Have you guys continued to find that sort of input valuable? I know Studio Neat had one project that definitely turned out a certain way. You maybe talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, that I think that's the underappreciated aspect of Kickstarter. Is, you know, everyone thinks about it as this, you know, fundraiser and a way to bring, you know, creative projects into the world, which of course is you know, what it is for. But perhaps as important is, like you just said, this idea validation, where you can throw an idea out there into the world and see if people are actually willing to pluck down, you know, hard-earned money to support that idea. So back in, I think it was 2015, our company has kind of zigzagged all over the place, and we've never really stayed within one product category. And so this was kind of out of left field, but we decided to make like a laser cat, like an automated laser cat toy that you can control with your iPhone. And this was our one Kickstarter project that was not a success. We had a complicated product with lots of electronics and stuff. So we had a really big ask. It was like $120,000, I think, was our funding goal. And we ended up raising about half that. So, you know, we fell well short of our goal. And looking back, like, it was a super bummer at the time, obviously. But looking back, I'm really glad that that happened, because I think it just it really kind of focused on what we should be working on and the types of products we make and kind of serving our existing customer base. So really it was a blessing that we had, even though we lost quite a bit in terms of labor. Like, we had been working on that product for several months, like half a year, I think. We didn't really lose much in terms of the financial side, because we were able to test that idea before we brought it into production. So, you know, like I said, even though it was a total bummer and it was sad for a while, looking back, I'm really thankful that things kind of played out the way they did.
So both of your companies make, for the most part, No Studio Need has done some software projects, but for the most part, the two of you are making tangible goods, you know, hardware, things that I can purchase and they sit on my desk, or I put them in my bag or wherever. And so I see where that sort of interest gauging can work for a project like that, right? But the other side of Kickstarter, or a large part of it, is creative work. So I actually backed like a documentary called App the Human Story that they started like 3 or 4 years ago. And they finally shipped the final version of the videos. We recorded this like 2 days ago. And wow. It's been a long process, and they've had to, I think, raise more money. And it's just been a very complicated thing. And I wonder, like, when you guys look at projects like that, they're obviously different from what you do. Do you think that one sort of project, you know, something creative that, hey, you have to have good faith in me that I can deliver this film, or I can deliver this audiobook or whatever it is, versus, hey, you know, back this is what you're going to get in the mail, you know, in 6 to 9 months or whatever it is. Brad, do you have any sort of thoughts on that, the difference between those two types of things?
It seems like it's easier to just go straight in and back a more digital product. You have more just kind of inherent faith that it's going to be a successful project, whether that faith is misplaced or not. You know, you don't really know. But manufacturing, you know, since we've mostly done manufacturing projects, there's so much that can go wrong. And I've been part of so many failed manufacturing projects and projects that didn't ship. It seems like that's a little bit riskier bet when you're, you know, kind of putting your faith in a project being built. Even though, say, you know, the movies or films or music, I back a lot of books, and I bought back a lot of movies and, you know, DVDs, documentaries, things like that. I always just inherently question those less. Like, yeah, I'm pretty sure this is going to get built. You know, maybe the producers will run out of money somehow and something goofy will happen. But like, the list of things that can go wrong in a manufacturing project just seems like I could see how it would actually scare some people away from certain projects.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting point, Stephen. And I think it kind of gets to a little bit of the kind of friction within Kickstarter. I think the original idea was much more kind of the latter thing you described, where it's about being a patron of the arts, basically. So it's like there's this creative individual that wants to make a piece of art, essentially, you know, a piece of music or a painting or a film or whatever, and you are contributing a small amount to make that piece of art exist in the world, just for the sake of, you know, the beauty of that art existing. And of course, getting, you know, if it's a film or music, you know, getting to experience it. But this idea of kind of Kickstarter being essentially a pre-order platform, which is how we've kind of used it, I think that was a little bit different than how they kind of originally thought of Kickstarter. And so there's this balancing act of those two things that feel pretty different. One feels kind of very like commercial, and then the other feels more, you know, kind of like on the art side. So I think that's been a challenge for them, is how they kind of skew their message and how they kind of serve those two groups, because I do think they are quite different. And I've backed project kind of from both sides, and I do think it's interesting, kind of what Brad was saying, where I think I've backed at least two films. I backed the App Story film and another Stefan Sagmeister documentary that took, I think, like literally over 5 years to complete. They also released it this year. And it is interesting for those kind of projects, the waiting isn't nearly as frustrating as for like a physical product. Like if we took 5 years to deliver, you know, the glyph or whatever, that would be a real problem. So yeah, it is interesting that Kickstarter is kind of able to serve those two types of projects, and it's kind of an interesting challenge for them to balance those two.
If for some reason, a lot of the feedback on the manufacturing product is it seems like there's a different expectation of receiving your goods, right? Like if you're essentially backing a project that's essentially a pre-order, you fully intend to get your goods. So you're always looking for, where are my goods? Where's my thing that I paid for? Where that's not really what Kickstarter's for, right? So that message gets lost a little bit. And for some reason with the more artistic projects, I don't see that as much.
Yeah, I agree with you too. I think there's definitely some like inherent weirdness that this one, you go to this one website and there's such a like two different sides to it, and then you have people like the two of you, or like the four of you with your business partners, where a project led to a whole company and like a business, and this is what you guys now do for a living. And I'm sure that was not on like the whiteboard and like the Kickstarter garage, you know, like we're going to launch Kickstarter and people are going to start businesses on it. It is so different from, you know, how things have been done for decades, right? If you had a business idea, the only way to sort of do it was to do it. Like you put your own money in, or you go get a loan, or you have backing somewhere, and then you spend a bunch of money, and then you see, you know, if people show up to the shop, right? You open the door and there's a line outside, or there's not, and then you know if you've made it or not. But Kickstarter and platforms like it have seemed to have reversed that a little bit, where you can sort of see if the idea or the product itself makes sense to become something bigger. And obviously there's a lot of upside to that, right? So, you know, say that you guys had decided just to go all in with Obi and not have the Kickstarter, right? You invest all this money, you put it out for sale, and then, you know, not many people show up. That would be really bad. So that's a big upside to crowdfunding. But are there downsides to it that you can think of? Are there things that Kickstarter has allowed in the world that aren't positive either for creators or people looking to purchase something?
It seems to me, I don't think there's any downside on the types of projects that I run or that, you know, I'm a backer of that I necessarily see, but I do see the platform as a whole, the Kickstarter platform as a whole, being almost overrun with kind of questionable projects. You know, I don't certainly look at all the projects, but I see, you know, we can reminisce like about the heyday of Kickstarter, where there was always something new and cool coming out. And now I do understand backers' questions of, you know, the longer the platform's been around, the more people might have gotten burned. And then the lack of reins that Kickstarter had for a time a couple years ago, where you didn't have to have an approval on your project, was kind of a weird time. So I think overall, like, I love Kickstarter. You know, I've backed I don't know, 80 something projects, you know. Wow. I will use it, you know, all the time. I think it's a really, really neat thing, but I also have experience with Kickstarter and know what to look for, you know, in picking out the right projects to support. So I think from my perspective as a project creator, like, I haven't had any issues, or I don't see any downside necessarily personally. I just have to make sure I hit my goals and communicate with the people, with all the backers, and, you know, make sure, you know, if the project's running late, that you're communicating with them. So I don't have any downside as far as that goes, but I do see some negativity around the platform as a whole. And that was actually more 2 years ago. It's actually kind of gone in the other direction here recently, I think.
Yeah, I would, one thing that sprang to mind is, something that could be a potential downside, and it's kind of the project creator's job to make sure it's not a downside, and that is the gap of time between when you launch the project and when you actually deliver it. Because in standard, especially when you're talking about, you know, kind of like physical products, the way, you know, Brad and I do and our companies do, there's this consumer expectation that you're basically able to buy something immediately. And so when you have this gap of, you know, when they're made aware of a product and when they're actually able to get it, that can be a downside if you're not kind of using Kickstarter appropriately. So what that means is giving really great updates, you know, showing the process and behind the scenes and keeping people engaged and basically telling a story of the production of that product can become a benefit rather than a downside. But that's kind of what you're having to battle against, is this built-in consumer expectation that there's like instant gratification mm-hmm. that we've all kind of gotten used to. So that's kind of like, you know, could be a downside, but you should try to turn into a benefit.
Of the projects I've backed, the creators who do send those regular updates, and I think the two of you are both really good at this, of kind of bringing the backer on the journey of creating the product that they're interested in. So seeing updates about, hey, you know, we're going to the printer, this is what this looks like. Hey, these are being manufactured, we're doing fabric samples, whatever it is. I like that because I feel like I'm part of the process, that the thing that I'm going to get in my mailbox in, you know, the coming weeks or months, that like I know where it came from and who made it. And there's something about that that I really like as a consumer and as sort of just a picky human being. And I imagine that is something that you always have to be thinking about as you are going through a project, of how do we keep people engaged? How do we keep them excited? Right? Because if they're excited and they're engaged, and they're maybe less likely to complain that their thing hasn't shipped. But what are some other parts of running a project that may differ from what, you know, people think of? Like what is it like to do one of these things and to sort of put something out there and see what people think of it?
Well, it's definitely, if it's successful, it's definitely exciting. It's one of the more exhilarating things that you will experience. This idea that you had this thing you want to make, and, you know, people are on board for it. They're interested in it and excited about it in the same way you are. And that's incredibly exciting. So it's, I remember with our first campaign, it was like we had that amazing feeling of like, holy cow, this is blown up way more than we thought it would. And then that was immediately followed by, holy cow, like, can we actually do this? Like, there's this immediate kind of a weight of expectation to deliver. So you get used to that over time, and with each successive project, I feel like we're able to manage that. But yeah, it's really, I feel like every project, it's always the thing to focus on and kind of the challenge and the thing to balance is, how engaged you're keeping the backers and how, you know, often you're updating them. You know, you don't want to, I'm always a little bit annoyed when I back a project and they're a little too aggressive with updates. So I think there's like a real sweet spot of, you know, how in the loop you're keeping people. But yeah, it's kind of just something that you figure out over time and through experience and kind of through listening to your backers and customers and kind of what they expect and what they want.
Yeah, it's absolutely a case of the first time is going to be the most difficult time by far. There's definitely a little bit of a science to running a campaign, and I've gotten more comfortable every time we've run one. Even if we're not doing necessarily a manufacturing campaign for Nock, we'll do an annual Pen Addict event Kickstarter where you do get some products for backing the campaign, but it's really to get us all together and Steven come shoot a video at the Atlanta Pen Show every year for the past 3 years now. And that's like a fun kind of community outreach type project. So it's fun to be able to do those little extra things for your customers and your fans. But yeah, it's like Dan and I's experience is virtually identical with the first project. It was, you know, exhilarating to see like our goal met, you know, in minutes, you know, hours, if not minutes. And it didn't stop. And like 2 weeks into it, it was like, we need to turn this off. Can somebody make it stop? Like it's getting too big. Like we're having to physically sew all these goods in Jeff's, you know, bedroom, second bedroom apartment. And, you know, it's going to take us a long time now. We really had like panic in the middle of the first thing, like eliminating backer levels to so we could extend the dates. Like but you know, you never want to tell people to stop giving you money, but it was like, yeah, we're gonna burn ourselves, we're gonna, you know, not really meet our true end goal, which would be, you know, to hopefully start a company, you know, if we have a bad experience on this Kickstarter. So we made it through, you know, we're only 2 or 3 months late, which in Kickstarter world, you know, that's pretty much on time.
So I assume I know the answer to this, but will we be seeing more Nock and Studio Neat projects in the future?
Yeah, so we don't do too much. Honestly, I think the answer is this for us. If we can not do a Kickstarter, we won't do it. Like, we would try to avoid it. But when we make, have always wanted to increase like the size of our products. Like if we're getting into like a backpack, we did a small briefcase last year. The costs involved in larger, you know, products for us goes up exponentially. So yeah, you will definitely see a Nock, you know, Kickstarter again if we have a larger product to launch, like a backpack. But for like a lot of our smaller day-to-day products, we'll just launch directly on the site. But I wouldn't hesitate to do another Kickstarter, and I'm sure we will. Like, I don't know if it's soon. I don't know if it's in 2018, but I would absolutely do it again.
No surprise announcements today for Relay members.
No surprise announcements today. You'll have another Pen Addict Kickstarter before you'll have another Nock Kickstarter.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so it's probably should be pretty clear at this point. We love Kickstarter and keep returning to it, and no reason to stop at this point. We don't launch every single product on Kickstarter, and I don't have a clear answer of really which ones we decide to do on Kickstarter and which ones we don't. A lot of it does have to do with just the straight up cost of, you know, the initial upfront investment. It really helps to have Kickstarter to do that. Oftentimes it's a combination of that and, you know, the idea validation thing. We're actually probably gonna be doing another Kickstarter hopefully by the end of January. So we can keep our eyes peeled for that, I guess.
Awesome. Well, thank you both for taking time to join me today on Fusion. It's always fun to talk to you guys.
Yeah, thank you.
If you are listening to my voice right now and you're not a Relay FM member, it's okay. We still love you, but you should learn more about membership and join up. Support a bunch of good shows like The Pen Addict or Thoroughly Considered. You can learn more at relay.fm. /membership. Until next month, adios.